Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Brian Scalabrine is our Odyssey NBA insider. He has been tremendous breaking down the NBA playoffs with us throughout the postseason. We get one final conversation with him coming up in 24 minutes. We'll ask him about Giannis's unbelievable series. And if you're starting a franchise with any player in the NBA right now, recency effect would say Giannis, but is he actually the answer? We'll ask Scalabrine that question on Grant and Danny. I still can't get enough, by the way, of all of Giannis's celebration on social media right now, Danny.
Just bring it to me. Bring me all of it. I want to see what he's doing. Is he ordering a large meal? Is he eating it in his car? Is he getting exactly 50 of whatever object it is? How long is he going to keep that bit up? I just hope he has fun, man.
I thought about me, Darius, and Ryan, because we're in the studio today. You're at the beach still. I thought about having us go to a Chick-fil-A and ordering the Giannis and just getting 50 of the chicken minis.
Lemonade, half Sprite.
Yeah, put it away all day while we're drinking half lemonade, half Sprite, no ice. But then I realized, I'm like, I don't know if there's a Chick-fil-A anywhere near here. Where's the closest Chick-fil-A to where we're sitting right now? Is there one in the city somewhere? You would know that better than I would.
Anecdotally, I don't know that there are Chick-fil-A's in Washington, D.C.
There is one. I'm terrible with my D.C. directions, but
Danny,
I want to say it's somewhere up Pennsylvania Avenue, if I'm remembering
like
correctly.
Toward the White House?
Or close to that, like, Eastern Market area is where I think there's one.
Yeah. On the other side. Okay, headed towards Eastern Market.
It doesn't really look like a Chick-fil-A, though. If I remember, it's like a pale white building, and it just has the Chick-fil-A logo slapped on the side. It doesn't look like your traditional standalone Chick-fil-A.
Chick-fil-A is the best. Yeah. Is there some strategy I don't know about that you guys may know? Is there a reason why there aren't a lot of them? Like, there's a billion of everything else, and Chick-fil-A's, it's almost like you never know when you're going to see one, so it's special.
So here's what I got. There's three in D.C. One of them is on the campus of the George Washington University.
I'm not going to count that one
for folks.
That's probably like at the, you know, they have a hall where there's like seven restaurants. Chick-fil-A is one of them.
It's in the dining hall, J Street. And what's funny is there is no J Street in D.C. and that's why they call it that. So there are two locales: 14th Street, 3100 14th Street, kind of the mid northwest, and then kind of where Darius is talking about, out there. I think even a little further than Eastern Market. It's on actually called Market Street. But it's really close to the edge of where D.C. meets Maryland.
Good knowledge, Darius. Why isn't there a J Street in D.C.? I thought they just go every letter in order.
They did just kind of. There's a rumor that Pierre L'Enfant hated John Jay and didn't want a J Street. That is one of the historical rumors. I don't know if that's true or not. Rick Snyder might know. He was there. Oh, thank you. But the second thing would be just kind of the way, like the layouts, when you had a couple diagonal streets, cross streets, there may not have been enough room for a J Street. I don't know.
Danny always tries to tell me, like, oh, D.C. layout is so great, and it's not confusing, people overrate it. And then there's all of these little nuances that people don't like talking about. There's no J Streets. There's four of everything. He's like, it's a perfect. The numbers go in one way, and the states go the other, and the names of the presidents are a diagonal, or whatever it is.
And then roads change directions at different times of the day. Just so great.
It's the best.
So incredibly simple. Well, it's well-engineered. I mean, it's a
330 I can
with
drive.
The capital at the center.
Only this way, and I'm pointing in front of me. But at 6:30, I can drive only this way, and now I'm pointing behind me. I'm sure that's great.
It is. It's built for commuters. It's built for people who should be using the roads. Not rubes. Commuters. People that commute. It is a well-engineered bit of rush hour. And you're not asking... And it's not the time for me to compliment D.C. We're not doing a whole lot right now. We're giving out parking tickets again at a great rate. So we're
good
at that.
That's fun.
But, yeah, and I can't wait to move out of the city for a million reasons. But I will say... That's correct. That's how traffic should go, by the way. More lanes for the direction that traffic is going is a perfectly sensible and reasonable thing. The
Never
grid
forget
system
on that road
beautiful.
That changes which way you can go based on the hour.
Uh-huh.
Once a week, there are trucks stuck under overpasses somehow.
It's once a month. It's
is
not
it?
Once a week.
Are you
yes,
sure?
It's not once a week. Yes, it's not once a week. Matt, some truck guy's like, I can do it. No, you can't.
Matthew in DC
low
wants to argue
bro.
With me. He says there's a lot of Chick-fil-A's. Matthew, I don't think there's nearly enough Chick-fil-A's.
There's definitely not enough Chick-fil-A's. But, Danny, there's one off of Wisconsin where Best Buy used to be.
There's a Chick-fil-A there
up
now?
In that area. Yeah. Yeah. I think it used to be like a Subway or something, but now it's Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, that's in Tenleytown. I don't have a five.
Tenleytown. I'm a big Tenleytown guy, even though I don't know anything about D.C. I've done a lot of those, like... You know, the TV stations all over there in
yeah,
Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's where Fox
Avenue.
5 is, yeah. USA Channel 9 is.
All right,
right there,
well, that's where I'll get my next Chick-fil-A in the city experience.
Apparently there's one in DuPont, according to this map I'm looking at. I don't know about that.
How many players would you say you need for a COVID outbreak leading to a forfeiture? I'm going to say at least like 10. I'm going to make it a really high number because I want no games forfeited.
Agreed. That's kind of the number I had in my mind. And here's the way I was approaching that. Not just 10 positive tests, but again, thinking of the unvaccinated, et cetera, with the contact tracing, right? Where you go, hey, this guy tested positive today. He was around these three guys. They ain't positive yet, but we got a pretty good feeling that they will. You know, just kind of the way those outbreaks went for shutdowns, the way it happened with the Ravens last year. The number I had was 10 in my mind. I would say 9 or 10.
I'm with you. I'll bet you the league, because it seems like they're way, way more aggressive in what they're doing than what I expected.
They go, two, it's a spike.
What I would be doing. They're like, you got two people that are unvaccinated with COVID cases? You're not playing for a week?
That's a spike.
I don't know. Maybe they'll – I mean, last year it was referred to, and this is just diction, right? It's word choice for every different person. But, I mean, the semantics were like three was an outbreak, I feel like. I remember the Nats, quote-unquote, had an outbreak when they at the beginning of this season. You're thinking, oh, my gosh, the whole team's got it. And it came back that three or four guys would be unavailable for a little while. 800-636-1067 is the number on the Gambit DC listener lines. We're asking you guys if you think the league's rules that they're passing down to players can't force an employee to get the shot. They've decided they're not going to do that. But with the vaccine, they're trying to put pressure on players. So you could miss a game check. You could have to forfeit if there is an outbreak on the roster. Any interest, by the way, real quick before we go to the phones? Darius and Ryan, in doing the Giannis tomorrow, where we split 50 chicken minis, because everyone's telling me this one by Tenleytown is apparently run like a well-oiled machine. Maybe we could somehow get 50 chicken minis tomorrow and just split them.
Chicken minis are so good. I'm all in.
They're so good.
I'm in.
That's a great
but
idea.
Isn't it only a breakfast item? And doesn't breakfast end
Giannis
at 10:30?
Somehow got him at lunch.
No, Giannis was there at like 9 a.m.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, he was definitely there early.
That's a tough break.
Yeah.
Chick-fil-A breakfast rules, by the way.
Yes,
it's very
does.
Good. So what time do you think it ends?
10:30. I'm a professional.
All right,
that's a lock.
Could we pick them up at 10:30 and we can enjoy them at 12:15 over our show meeting? Is that a possibility?
We'll work it out.
All right. Danny, you're still at the beach, so you're going to miss out. But
pretty
maybe
much.
You could bike a few miles while we're doing it. Just wear some spandex.
I'll accept that, Zing. I'm going to have my gloves for safety.
Bet you will. Very safe. Dal is in Springfield. What's up, Dal? How are you?
Hey, I'm doing all right. How you guys?
Good, man. What's up?
Yeah. I was just calling to see why are a lot of these players actually using their First Amendment if they don't want to take the vaccines, like their religion belief form? Like, does the NFL have any of that if they decided to opt out?
Well, that's there. I'm sure there may be like a couple built-in excuses there, but this isn't a government installation forcing you to do something, right? This is an employer. And a condition of employment can be set by the employer. They've got a much wider breadth than would say if you work for, like, I don't know, the state government or the comptroller's office or something like that. So I'm sure there are probably some exceptions built into the CBA or this kind of conversation with the NFL and NFLPA GP. But, you know, we're talking about more the mass phenomenon than we are that one person who's like, no, I'm this religion and I can't or something like that.
Yeah,
you know?
I also it might be out there. I have not heard any player come forward and say, this is why I haven't gotten it and why I'm not going to. Maybe they just won't or don't want to divulge that. Like, the guys that we know that are publicly speaking about this, I referenced Sweat. He's the one guy locally that has, or Cam Curl, mm-hmm. who I saw on Instagram the other day, just talking to his followers. Cole Beasley, like, none of them have referenced that. It's that this is my choice. I don't want to do this. I think that is a very real thing and could be something that the league has a difficult time with. But to my knowledge, I don't know anybody who's come out and said that. Another thing I'm thinking about here that should be at least thrown out as some food for thought. What does this say about what the NFL is hearing about the seriousness of the variants potentially? Like, do you think in some way, like, they're getting their own information, whatever it is, and this is their opportunity to try to get ahead of that? Like, they got one shot at this to make sure we don't have 2.0 in 2021, where next thing you know, it's cases all over the league and whatever else. I mean, I think, like, they have
fair question.
Doctors on staff, Alan Sills, they're talking to people with these these, you know, nation-leading organizations. I wonder. I mean, they got a lot more information than I do. Let's go to Ron in Triangle on Grant and Danny. What's up, Ron?
Hey, Grant and Danny. Yeah, quick question. So when they start forfeiting checks, is that going to be for the coaches and also the GMs and front office also?
No. Which is a weird thing, isn't it, Ron? Because to my knowledge,
yeah, it's a great question.
I don't think coaches get – well, I know coaches don't get game checks. I mean, they sign these contracts, and it's not divvied up into 17 checks like players, to my knowledge.
See, my thing is this, is if everyone is affected, like the whole team, like the GM, Martin Mayhew, you're not getting paid this next couple of weeks. I think that they will put pressure on the team or the players to reach this 85% threshold.
Interesting. That's a great question, though, about...
It's a really good one.
...coaches and players. Now, coaches have their own pressure that's been applied to the point where I don't know what the latest report was, but we were down to, like, a couple of assistants around the entire league who hadn't been vaccinated because the league did the same thing to the coaches before. It wasn't as big a story because people don't care as much as the players whose jerseys they have. Like, they basically said, you can't be on the grass during training camp around the team. You can't be on the field on game day. Like, you're going to be calling plays like that college coach who was, like, on his hospital bed. Remember that?
Oh, my gosh.
Hugh Freeze or whoever that guy was. Like, you're going to be away from the team, like, calling the game or whatever. Like, you can't be part of the process on game day. So they have already thrown the gauntlet down and essentially said to the coaches, you're not going to be able to do what you need to do if you're not vaccinated. And that's how they force the hand of the coaches first. Matt is an only. What's up, Matt?
Hey, guys. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Got you, buddy.
Okay, thanks. Hey, I know you're asking about if you think it has an impact on if more people will get vaccinated.
Your phone's tough, man. Sorry.
I broke up. Sorry.
Yeah, that's a brutal phone. Let's go to Nick in Vienna. Hey, Nick, you're on Grant and Danny. News of the day. League is going to have teams forfeit games. Players won't get paid if unvaccinated players lead to a COVID outbreak. What's up?
I think your number is a little too high on 10.
Okay.
And they will be standing in line to get their vaccines. This is a bold and necessary move. And I think it's a genius move by the NFL. They're going to drop the hand. They can cut you for any reason they want. They can release you. And now you've got pressure to say, you don't get the vaccination. No. It's one thing for you to get cut yourself, but when you're affecting other people's paychecks and the science, and you're not following the science.
But that's the problem. And thank you for the call, Nick. That's the whole point, Danny, is, and I said to you, how can they possibly tell me, I'm the opponent, we have no cases this week, I don't get to play, that I don't get any money. And you keep coming back to, well, they're doing it so that everybody gets vaccinated. And I know that. It just doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel like it should be allowed that I did everything correctly that they wanted me to do. I was ready for the game. I didn't get to play, and I still don't get paid. So you're telling me I can't work for reasons that have nothing to do with me, and you're not going to let me get paid for not working.
This isn't Titans, Jets, Falcons, you know, Lions. This is NFL players at large. It's 53 men times 32 teams plus practice squad guys, et cetera. Everybody that's in the player pool. This is the league management, not a team manager, not a general manager, not an owner. This is the league to all the independent contractors that make up the league, which is what players are. They're their own business, basically, and they work for teams and cycles and either get cut, move on, or whatever. This is them saying to all of them, this is the deal. So, yeah, they're not treating teams individually anymore when it comes to this stuff. This is, again, NFL players sort of writ large. But he brought up a point that actually you and I talked about this a little bit, and I think it was the Brandon Bean of the Buffalo Bills who kind of mentioned this. If there's kind of a tie between two guys, if there is such a thing, between who I'm keeping, who I'm not, I'll probably keep the vaccinated guy so that, you know, we can have a normal training camp, or, you know, we can have dinner on the road together, or whatever it is. Well, now imagine you're a general manager and there's a roster decision to be made. This dude might one day cost us a game. Not even like, you know, a convenient meeting room where I don't have to wear a mask or whatever. This player, hypothetically, could be responsible for some sort of outbreak that makes me take an L in a division game, or I you know, guys don't get paid and there's a revolt. This, I'm stunned, frankly, that the NFL has gone to this level of pressure.
Yeah, I'm shocked.
And think about it what you want. It's, again, your opinion, you're welcome to it. I'm just kind of sitting here blown back that the NFL has gone this hard with this. I'm just kind of in awe of it. That's all.
Yeah, you and me both. I'm stunned. But they did it now for a reason, too. The timing is obvious. You've got a handful of days before camp in a lot of these cases.
And they don't like the trend, yeah.
If you don't want to get the shot and the vaccination during camp because you may not feel well for a day, or it might be hard to go about your tour day, or you have to take a day off, or whatever it is, you could do it now. And the other part of this is they're laying the gauntlet down so players know that when they show up, they might have to do it, and they can start planning accordingly with the teams. I mean, there might be teams, Washington, Indianapolis, who knows who else, that push even being on the grass back a couple days just to try to get some guys vaccinated and stay in the classroom. Because all of a sudden, that might be the bigger priority with these new rules that are hard to fathom from the NFL coming down, that are just that bold and that big of a deal that nobody saw coming, than just the extra day of practice you might get to start camp. It might be more important to you to try to have a better chance to navigate 18 weeks, 17 games. Steve in Silver Spring, how are you?
Pretty good.
What's going on?
I want to. I have a Chick-fil-A update.
Oh, okay.
Closest to the stadium is actually the Chick-fil-A that's at Dakota Crossing, which is if you come into the city on New York Avenue, right behind the big Costco. So from the station, you take the 6, that's, you know, the 895, take it to, you know, yeah, Route 1 or Route 50 coming into the city, and it's right there across from the Lowe's and the Dick's Sporting Goods.
Look at you, Steve.
So that would be closest to the pin right there? You may be right about that,
yeah,
actually.
My guy's done a little research, so we're going to get the Giannis tomorrow from there, perhaps. And that makes more sense because we're being told the Tenley Town location may not have a drive-thru, and we're going to need a drive-thru.
Yeah, it's further. So there's a closer Chick-fil-A in spirit, but it's the one that's inside Union Station. You know, it's like a food court Chick-fil-A.
I'm looking for a very convenient air-conditioned car, say something out the window, and then be handed a big bag of chicken mini situation. That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, I get that.
I think that's what he's giving us. Cedric's and Bowie on G&D. What a day in the NFL. Teams risking forfeitures if they have COVID outbreaks, and we're talking here in D.C. with Washington having the lowest vaccination rate. What's up?
Hey, man, I think it's actually kind of crazy that they're trying to implement that, and then they're isolating guys that are unvaccinated. So how about if one of the guys that are vaccinated gets it and spreads it? Does it still mean the same thing, or is it a totally different element? What is the difference?
Well, here's how I think they'll answer that, and I'm speculating because I can't speak for them. They've said this is about unvaccinated players. So if the COVID outbreak starts with a vaccinated player, obviously what we've heard is that it's harder to get COVID, it's harder to spread COVID if you're vaccinated. If you're unvaccinated, it's a lot easier for both of those categories, right? But the point being, if let's say, I don't know how you would even trace it back to who started it, if more players have COVID that are unvaccinated on the team, let's say you got 3 or 4 guys that aren't vaccinated, and the league's going to know who is and who isn't at the start of the season, then they would count that as an unvaccinated outbreak. It's going to be based on who has COVID and whether or not they've been vaccinated. Isn't that the way you're understanding it, Danny?
I think so, yeah, because it gets into semantics and it gets confusing. I want clarification, too, on all these permutations, right? I wonder how, you know, one team will be judged one way, another will be judged a different way based on how we got here. It is – I don't think the NFL really wants to deal with that. I think this is their – you know, them walking out and beating their chest and – going as hard as possible. I think when you get down to the nitty-gritty, just like the caller brought up, you may get into a semantic challenge where you go, well, the initial outbreak here was actually a vaccinated guy, but there's two unvaccinated guys, so maybe this and that. And then maybe they might get a game postponed by a day, and then another team might have to forfeit, and then you get an outcry. Then you get people that are rightfully, maybe, you know, understandably upset about certain things. I think they're basically trying to use every lever they have right now so they don't have to do that sort of stuff when it comes time to do it.
How about this question from Jeff? Jeff, I got to get to Brian Scalabrine in just a moment, but be quick because I thought this was interesting.
All right, hey. My question is, number one, Daniel Snyder's a billionaire. The players make plenty of money. Well, my question is, all right, I've been a season ticket holder for 25 years like a dumbass, but anyway, that's beside the point. And I'm from Fauquier County, and I remember when you were a kid, you were in the Fauquier Democrat doing Redskin stuff when you were about 8 years old.
But my
anyway,
man.
That's beside the point. But anyway, what I'm getting at is, all right, season ticket holders or people that have bought tickets, when the games get canceled because of COVID, is Daniel Snyder going to pay is the NFL?
So that's what I saw in the call screener when I said, whoa, interesting. If a game gets banged and none of the players get paid, whatever else, I guess the fans would just be reimbursed, yeah? They'd have to be.
You would think. And that may be where, you know, the coverage of cost comes from the forfeiting team. That's part of that, right? That game experience. If, you know, if it's a road team that and a team's going to lose a home game because of it, and cash has to go back out to fans. Maybe the road team covers that. If that was the forfeit team, I don't know, man. Again, these are permutations the NFL doesn't want to deal with. That's why they're going strong now.
Brian Scalabrine, our Odyssey NBA insider, joins us next. We'll talk about the unbelievable performance of Giannis, the NBA Finals, and where the Wizards go from here with a new head coach on Grant and Danny.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Grant and Danny, welcoming you back on The Fan. Want to welcome in our Richmond audience on 910 AM 105.1 FM with us for the next 3 hours. To all of you in and around D.C. listening to 106.7, we appreciate you. Remember to take us with you via the Odyssey app. Speaking of Odyssey, our Odyssey NBA insider, Brian Scalabrine, is on the BetQL guest hotline right now. Bet smarter to beat the books. Download the BetQL app today. Scals, how about Giannis Antetokounmpo? The Giannis series has come and gone. What a show.
Oh, he was amazing. And I love the fact that leading into this, like, it felt like every NBA player was not going to give him any credit. And then he drops a 50-piece in game six, one of the better closeout games we've ever seen. You know, I got to compare it to Magic Johnson jumping center for Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Like, that's the only type of comparison we can have. But, Giannis was off the charts, and I love he's been so elegant through the finals, giving credit, being humble. And I love how he's been completely silly since then, whether it be on Instagram, social media, talking to his brothers, talking to the media. It's been really good.
Yeah, explore the space, man. You know, enjoy it. It's rarefied air. Now, a couple days later here, Brian, how would the playoffs have been different if everybody was healthy? I mean, to me, when you take this away, there are two stories, right? It's Giannis and his ascension and what he did in that closeout game and coming back from his own injury. But then kind of the story of the playoffs were a bunch of stars that ended up missing time.
Yeah, so the question I have is just like I look at, and maybe we all should, go back and watch the Bucks in games 1 and 2 versus the Brooklyn Nets. And I actually do believe that they're a completely different team, significantly better watching them in the Sun series. And I do think they've grown throughout, but I can't help but to think, and like I picked the Bucks to win the NBA championship right off the jump, but I felt like I was wrong after watching games 1 and 2. They got dominated by the Nets. So, I mean, like the simple conclusion is, you know, if Kyrie Irving was healthy, they probably would have lost to the Nets. Hey, if Kawhi Leonard was healthy, like the Suns probably would have lost to the Clippers. So there's a lot of injuries that came into play, but the NBA is turning into a battle of attrition, and injuries are a part of it. I just felt like this year it was a big part of the outcome. But with that being said, I'm really interested to see how the Bucks grow from this. If they've grown from round two to now, what happens to them next year when they, you know, won that championship and they know they are champions and they know they're playing winning type of basketball, which I think they figured that out, who they are in the Phoenix series.
Brian Scalabrine on Grant and Danny. Giannis in this second is the best player in the NBA, right? In the finals, he did what he did. Like, for this moment, this is his. Going into next year, you're ranking every player in the NBA. How high could Giannis be on that list? Should Giannis be on that list?
Yeah, I mean, obviously he's in the top five. But it depends. Like, it's like, what type of year is, you know, clearly LeBron James getting hurt affected him. You know, him spraining that ankle, that affected him. And Anthony Davis not being healthy affects him. Kevin Durant and his guys being out, that affects him. So yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, you could chalk this up. But if the Nets would have won it, we'd be open sitting here talking how great Kevin Durant is. So for Giannis, like I said before, I am really curious on how he grows from here, but I do expect him to take another leap forward. And I don't know what that leap is. Maybe that leap is, you know, like playing with his teammates more and, you know, learning how to the game to be easier for him versus, you know, forcing the issue. I thought he forced the issue a lot against Blake Griffin. I thought he let the game come to him a lot against the Phoenix Suns and DeAndre Ayton. So if Giannis is what we see when the best version of him, getting that ball side to side, really poised, man, making free throws. If he becomes that, then Giannis does have an argument to being the best player in the world. But you got to do that year after year after year for us to think that. Like, you can't just do it in a series and be up and down throughout a series. You have to be a consistent player, be a consistent fourth quarter player. He's still not, in a weird way, the go-to guy for the Milwaukee Bucks late in the game. That's still that title is still held by Chris Middleton. So to be the best player in the NBA, that's a big responsibility. And I think Giannis might be the most impactful when it comes to winning games. But to really understand that, we got to watch what Giannis does next year. And he's definitely in the conversation to become that.
So, Brian, similar question to that. But I just watched the NHL expansion draft last night with the Seattle Kraken. Taking into account age, you know, you're trying to build a team, let's say, for the next several years. Luka obviously is in that conversation with Giannis, whoever else you'd throw in there. Like, is he the top pick in that draft right now, or are there other guys in the running?
Yeah, I would take Giannis. I just think at 26 and, like I'm not saying you can get another Luka, but you'll never find another Giannis. Like, Luka can be compared to a lot of different players. And this is, I know it sounds like I'm throwing shade. I'm really not. Like, Luka's ridiculous. Like, he's compared to Larry and Magic. Like, that's like what Luka Doncic is, right? A little bit of James Harden in there as well. But with Giannis, you'll never find a guy like that. Giannis can play the 4. He can play the 5. At times in the NBA Finals, they ran a lineup with Giannis at the 3. So I would take him because of his impact on both ends of the floor. And like I said before, I do believe that he could take even more steps forward when it comes to poise and confidence. And if he's making free throws and he's like getting the ball at the top of the key and
having that great balance of going side to side and one-on-one and posting up smaller guys, he really is unguardable. So I think that I would take Giannis with the number one pick, but Luka wouldn't be far behind.
Brian Scalabrine with us here on Grant and Danny. Brian, in the NFL, somebody innovates and does something, then everybody rushes to kind of copy it, right? In basketball, we've seen a couple of these moments. You can tell me if you think I'm wrong, but a super team forms, then it becomes we got to all form our own super teams. Then the Warriors win it, and everybody's got to shoot X number of threes, et cetera. With these finals, is there anything that people are going to go, hey, that's our blueprint? Or is it just, yeah, good luck finding a 7-foot freak that you were just talking about can do everything on a basketball court except maybe, you know, shoot 45% from three? Is there some kind of thing that teams are going to try to copy, do you think, to try to get to where Milwaukee is?
Yeah, I love this question. Here's what I hope happens. You see how the Atlanta Hawks went out and got a bunch of veterans to match up with the young guys? The Phoenix Suns, they didn't say, hey, we're going to be good for the next 10 years and we're going to get, you know, another young player. I really like that they went out and got a 36-year-old point guard to go alongside of a bunch of young guys. And a lot of people would say that their timeline doesn't match. I would say that at the beginning of the year. Like, how is Chris Paul, who's ready to win now, and I don't know how many more years he has left, going to match up with Devin Booker, who hasn't even learned how to win yet? So I am actually a big proponent of having, and I'm not saying like, and when I say that, like not veteran guys that sit on the end of the bench and don't do anything. I'm talking like there's a lot of veteran guys that sort of fly under the radar. Guys who are in the league for 5, 6, 7 years that no one thinks is really like they're not the superstar player. So organizations roll the dice on a young guy that might become a superstar player, but not necessarily ready to be a role player. I like that Phoenix went out there and got Jay Crowder. I like that they got, you know, they got some experienced guys so they can build around their young nucleus. So I'm a big fan of that, and I hope that other teams might replicate that, especially teams who have been telling us we're 5 years away, we're 6 years away. Like the Phoenix Suns 2 years ago were garbage. The Atlanta Hawks 2 years ago were garbage. Both the Phoenix Suns go to the finals, Hawks go to the conference finals, and they did that because they took their cap space and they got some mature guys. So I hope that trend happens. And what you said about Giannis, you ain't finding one of those. What the Warriors did is putting a 6'6", extremely long, athletic, and incredible defensive player in Draymond Green, putting him at the five, and everyone tried to replicate that. But they found out that Draymond Green is more one of one than anybody. Like, he's not like anybody else when you see his skill set. So they tried to replicate that. You're not going to be able to replicate Giannis, but I do think you can replicate solid veterans at the end of benches that contribute to teams that help out. And obviously, you got to get the right guys.
What about Chris Paul? You mentioned it. You know, as happy as I am for Milwaukee and Giannis and Jrue Holiday and a lot of those guys on that roster, I kind of heartbroken a little bit for Chris Paul and company, who just, you know, is always just the bridesmaid, it seems like. Always kind of an injury in the conference semifinals or the finals, and just always right there so close but hasn't gotten one yet. Just your thoughts on him.
I mean, I thought I really loved Chris Paul last year. And sometimes it takes, like, us in the media or maybe people like that aren't, like, hardcore fans to really like to see a Chris Paul get the success and see what he has done. Like, I did not like him when he was with the Clippers. I was lukewarm on him when he was with the Rockets. And then I just absolutely fell in love with that OKC team, who really didn't do anything. They lost in the first round to the Houston Rockets, and I thought Chris Paul was great for that team. And he's done the same thing with Phoenix. So I think that resurrection of his career of going to the Oklahoma City Thunder, which no one really gave a chance, and even the Phoenix Suns, like, no one pencils those guys in to go to the finals, you know, at the start of the season. I really enjoyed that side of it. But this is an unforgiving game. Like, a lot of people are out there, like, you mentioned Chris Paul, who's almost got there. Guess what? The Bucks have almost got there, and, you know, a lot of those guys, like Mike Budenholzer, his job was on the line, and he saved his job. John Horst, maybe his job was on the line for going out there and trading for Jrue Holiday. So I don't really feel sorry for people that don't win it. I'll tell you who I do feel sorry for. Thanasis, who they win a championship and he's got to celebrate in a hotel room because he got banged with COVID. I feel really bad for him. I don't necessarily feel that bad for Chris Paul because, you know, he's had a great career. He's going to go down as an all-time great. And maybe he won't get over that hump, but he's going to make, you know, $500 million playing basketball. He's on State Farm commercial. He's going to be all right.
That's a sports tragedy in our little bubble. That's a sports travesty that you win a championship and you can't celebrate with your team.
Oh, no question.
You're in a hotel watching all the videos and an Instagram live and with guys. Ryan Scalabrine, Odyssey NBA Insider. You were 08 champion. You won the title.
Yeah.
What was that celebration like?
Dude, I will never tell my parent, my wife this, but it was way better than my wedding. It was way better than the birth of my kids. I would never tell her that, but there is no comparison. Winning the championship was the greatest day of my life. And I feel so, I really do. Like I'm not a teary guy, but I genuinely feel really bad for Thanasis not being able to celebrate with his brother and having to be in a hotel room while everybody, and you just got to sit there and stare at your phone. Oh, man. They talk about mental health. That would really mess me up big time.
Is there a moment you remember from that celebration that kind of stands out? Any of the several days of inebriation and whatever else was going on?
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing was unbelievable. I kind of hijacked the podium because I was kind of hammered, and I told the people that you won't remember that I didn't play in the finals. And then we threw out the first pitch. Like, as a team, we drove those duck boats right onto the field at Fenway and threw out the first pitch of a Red Sox game. And, you know, like the parade was phenomenal. And people were like throwing stuff to me, and I'd sign it and throw it back to them. It was like the whole thing, like the 2 weeks after winning a championship was amazing. That's why also with Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday getting on a plane and going to the Olympics, as great as the Olympics is, I feel like they're going to really miss out in the next 2 weeks, because it is such a relief when you finally do, because you're talking, anything can go any way. You know, you never know with an injury or anything like that. But when you finally win that title, it's absolutely unbelievable. And I'm happy that they got a chance to win it in Milwaukee. I was fortunate to win one in Boston, and it was, I mean, when you win one at home, it's like nothing else.
Brian, you're the best, buddy. Really enjoyed talking to you throughout these playoffs and the finals, man. The insight was awesome. Thank you.
Okay, guys. See ya.
That's Odyssey NBA insider Brian Scalabrine. Insider calls brought to you by Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline. We know life is busy, so come to Shell to fill up, save up, snack up, make the most of the stop you need to make. Next, our double play. We'll tell you what's going on in our lives that has nothing to do with sports. I've got an oddly high percentage of people I want to bounce off, Danny, who claim that they have done the deed on public transportation as part of our double play in a moment. Right here on The Fan. Double Play brought to you each and every day, sponsored by our friends at Mattress Warehouse. Free next day delivery, setup available, all orders over $7.99. They also give you a 1-year price guarantee. Learn more at sleephappens.com. Danny, I'll be quick and get out of the way for you here. A study shows that nearly 23% of Americans have done the deed on public transportation. To me, that's a shockingly high number. I know I'm a pretty boring guy, and well, for me, there's not a whole lot of guesswork. Normally, like, there's no lights on and I'm in a bedroom. 23% of Americans have done the deed on public transportation. That is
I find that number to be shocking. Shocking.
High or low?
Way high.
That's what I'm saying.
Way high. I mean,
are you one of the 23%?
I most certainly am not. I'm not that. I don't happen to be. Sorry. I don't know if that means I'm not adventurous or otherwise. I mean, it was revolutionary when Tom Cruise did it in Risky Business with Rebecca De Mornay in 1983. Like, that was the thing. And it was like, oh my God, that's so crazy. That's normal? Are people on the bus? People taking the D2 at certain hours of the day? Is it Metro? Is it the Acela? Like, what are we talking about?
It's, I think, airplanes. I could dig up some of the numbers, but it's airplanes.
I don't consider that public transport is the thing. You know what I mean? Like, I consider that airplane. Like, the public transport's like that you use your Metro card.
What about now, like, Ubers, taxis?
Mm.
I mean, that's tough. And Ubers?
That's tough, too.
That's a lot. That's
a
third
row SUV, maybe. It's a longer trip.
Third row SUV, perhaps.
I did at least 7 minutes.
Here you go. You want some numbers? Equates to almost 59 million people who have done the deed in public transportation individually. 30 million stated on an airplane, so that counts.
Okay, so it does count. There you go.
21 million on a bus, by the way.
What?
That's so outrageous. Have you ever been on a bus before?
Yes, I've ridden a bus many times.
How can you do that? I don't mean physically, which is its own question, but why would you do that? A $24 million on a train or a subway?
Okay.
The train, while all of this is outrageous, might make the most sense, I guess. And then $14 million taxi cab or rideshare. By the way, there's your taxi cab or your Uber.
14 million people. There's 13,999,999, and the one guy's like, here we go. I'll take a, yes, 8th Street Northwest, please. And then he has sex in that. That's ridiculous.
7 million occurrences is the math that I'm gathering for 14 million
I suppose
people.
That's right, yeah, because two people involved, you know, the way.
I guess it theoretically could be more. Yeah. 77% of public transportation.
Unbelievable.
Folks like you and I who haven't done it. Represent nearly 200 million people.
Only once in all my life did I see shenanigans like that. Coming home late at night on a late night subway train in on the west side of New York City, I saw a couple that didn't care, and good for them. You know, they had a minor audience. It was like that one part in Boogie Nights where the dude comes down the driveway and sees his wife on the pavement. They're just there. They're just doing stuff, and everyone was like, "Well, that's certainly happening. We could either move to another car, or this is my stop, and I got off." You know, which is pretty wild.
I think the number that shocks me the most out of all this is 30 million people on an airplane, because to me that's a movie thing. Like that doesn't really happen in real life, but apparently it does for a lot of people.
Red eye flight. Everybody's asleep. Maybe all the lights are down. Maybe.
But you're going back to that tiny little bathroom, like a phone booth, where you can barely stand up.
Yeah. Again, the logistics I find overly complicated that it just gets to the point of not being worth it to me. You know, I'd rather have like another juice. You know what I mean? Like, do you have a second cookie that I can have?
If they've got movie options on the plane, that's enough for it to not be worth it to me, because I'll just watch the movie.
Well, for you, it would have to directly conflict with your mutant ability of sleeping the instant you buckle in that seatbelt.
It's a great
on the airplane.
Point.
Yeah. Although, how are you supposed to do that?
I should tell you that because of some delays, my flight back from Denver to D.C. essentially became a red eye. I left it like really late, ended up losing hours. I got home at like 3 in the morning. I could not sleep a wink.
What?
First time ever, probably my first red eye. No matter what I did, I couldn't sleep. And I thought the whole time Danny's cursed me. Now, going out there, I was asleep by the time the plane left the ground.
Of course.
Didn't wake up until we slammed down landing. But, yeah, going back, couldn't sleep at all. All right, real quick, what do you got for your double play, sir?
Have you seen the movie The Revenant?
Of course I
have. Leo DiCaprio and Tom Hardy. Tom Hardy's awesome. Yeah, Leo, I thought the movie was okay. People raved over it because of the CGI bear fight that was really good, where Leo was basically like grappling with air or with like a piece of plastic or something like that. I thought Tom Hardy's whatever accent that was amazing, and he's just so great. Well, that happened in real life. A dude in Alaska was rescued, all right? This Coast Guard group running some kind of training mission, scoots around some nasty cloud cover, sees this dude on the roof of an abandoned tin shack that had the door ripped off, waving his arms, and not in a, hey, how's it going, guys, but in a, oh, my God, please help me. His leg is bandaged. He's, like, scraped out SOS in letters. So they find a way to land, transport this guy to the hospital. Here's what had happened. He's on some podunk little tiny mining claim where he's up there and he's, like old school gold rush style stuff, right? Where he's up there, he's like, I got to lay a claim to this little area here. I'm going to try to find some gold. He's up there by himself doing some mining, all right? A bear attacks him. The bear wounds him a couple times. Then the bear is not satisfied with that. The bear came back every night for 2 weeks. The bear came back to attack him every night for multiple weeks. He hadn't slept in 2 weeks and he gets rescued. It's the craziest story ever. His name is being withheld. But that is the story of the real-life Revenant guy in Alaska.
Tom Brady says he is Wayne Gretzky. He is Michael Jordan. He has said that out loud. We'll talk about that at 425. Our Beltway Blitz is next.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. Audacy. Download it today.